Hey, here's two things you shouldn't do. Buy a dead priest's rosary and watch a Jesus-themed horror movie on Easter Sunday. We tempted fate with the timing of an episode on Stigmata, which was the number one movie in America.
The number one movie in America.
Movie in America.
Movie in America.
The number one movie in America.
It's the number one movie in America. My name's Sean Collier, and I'm here with two youths in need of Nick Nolte's guidance. It's Robin Hitchcock.
The tomb is empty.
And Camila Adams.
I just want to be clear that I did not tempt fate. I don't be fucking around when it comes to Jesus Christ and God. There are two things I don't joke about, pancakes and Jesus. So,
Robin, did you and I both watch this on Easter?
I actually watched it the day after Easter, the Boxing Day of Easter. But
Boxing Day of Easter.
I've seen Easter Monday. I don't know what happens on Easter Monday.
It's a way for people to get the day off of work.
This is not the first time this has happened. The first time I was away from home, like the first time I was in college on an Easter weekend and I didn't go home, was the year of the Passion of the Christ.
Oh, man.
So I was like, I know what I'm doing. And I went and watched the Jesus Chainsaw Massacre. That's
right. And you were like immediately regretful.
I've never seen that movie. It sounds unpleasant.
Yeah, I don't think you wanna. It's not necessary.
It's 90 minutes of, you know, a weirdly told passion story and then 45 minutes of torture porn with Jesus.
Right. So Sean basically had it right when he's like, you know, the Jesus Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Yeah.
Basically.
But probably at least more in the spirit of the holiday than stigmata. Do we need to define the word stigmata? Like, does everyone just know what that means?
Come up in the 60-second plot recap.
I think it probably will, which is mine to share.
All right, great. Yeah, I was going to say, Sean, does it come up in the 60-second recap?
No, it doesn't. So before we get started...
This is a loophole. I'm going to allow it, but this is a loophole.
I grew up Catholic, so I'm allowed to say this derisively. There are certain things that the Catholic Church, that like little corners of the Catholic Church are like, this is a real thing over here, and they aren't. Like another one that comes up in this movie, bleeding statues or crying statues, or the Shroud of Turin, some old cloth that looked like Jesus a little bit. And another one is stigmata, which is some people say they are so moved by their religious fervor that they begin bleeding from the sites of Christ's wounds during the crucifixion. That's what the word stigmata means, if you didn't know. Yes.
I have so many things to say in response to that, but let's do the plot recap first.
Let's. Somebody time me.
Ready.
Patricia Arquette plays Frankie, a Claire's Boutique ad come to life. After her dumbass mom buys the stolen rosary of a dead priest and ships it to her, she starts getting stigmata, which is obviously very concerning to her, but surprisingly underplayed by her friends and doctors. The Vatican sends a priest, who initially dismisses it because Frankie is an atheist, but he changes his tune when, you know, she keeps bleeding from all the Jesus places. There's a subplot about how the dead priest was working on revealing a secret gospel, and the Vatican, as represented by one of the two popes, is trying to cover it up, but it doesn't go anywhere. Frankie doesn't die. The end.
Good. Way well under. About 40 seconds.
Yeah, I didn't feel like... The back half of this movie is just... her being moody and bleeding sometimes. So, like, there's not a whole lot to cover.
Yeah, what's funny is as I was watching it, I was like, either the director did a lot of music videos in his past of career, or...
He did.
They just... Oh, yeah. And I found out later that he did. Or my other theory was that they just had to... They had to stretch out a lot of... To fill up an hour and 45 minutes. Like, because there's so much slow motion.
I cannot...
And there's so much...
believe that this movie, it feels like they put so much filler in it when it's only an hour and 45 minutes long.
Right. So, yeah. And oddly enough, like the music videos he did, whoa.
Oh, it comes up just... in the faxy segment. We'll dive in.
Excellent.
Robin, you were going to comment on
the
notion of stigmata?
Are you Catholic as well, Camila? I used to mention going to Catholic school.
I went to Catholic school. I am not Catholic. I am Christian.
Okay. Yeah. I am neither. And like my mom was Catholic, but then she got divorced before she met my dad, or possibly because she met my dad. And so she very much was like, goodbye, Catholic Church, who's rejecting me. I reject you. And it really only, and my dad, I think, was kind of raised, you know, vaguely Protestant. And so we had a Christmas tree, but like, I have been to church. The most common church service I've been to is the Mormon church, because my parents' best friends were Mormons. We definitely weren't. So I don't have a relationship with Christ. And I think that this movie requires that you do
really?
To fully appreciate it.
That's kind of the thing about most religious-themed horror movies and nearly every exorcism movie. If you're like, yeah, I'm pretty sure there's no Satan, you're not going to be spooked.
Right. Well, I am kind of afraid of Satan, and I fully blame All Dogs Go to Heaven for that. And, of course, also the little kids I grew up with who would, like, find out that we don't read the Bible before bed and tell me about hell.
Where did you grow up?
At the time, I lived in Villanova, Pennsylvania. But for the most part, I grew up in New Jersey. And everyone is Catholic in New Jersey. Yeah. So, yeah, I guess that I think that I appreciated this movie less because I don't have that context. But what I wanted to say is that even with the small amount of context I do have, this doesn't really make sense. Like you said, Sean, Catholic Church pretends that statues bleed and pretends that the Shroud of Turin was real, or, you know, was Jesus rather. And in this movie, Pope number one, Jonathan Pryce, who's playing not a pope, but a bishop or something.
Pretty close, though.
Yeah, what is it about Jonathan Pryce that makes people cast him as South American religious people? He also played Juan Perón in Evita. He's not South American.
This man would look good in black and red. Get him.
But he's like very much against the miracles. He's like, we sent you to disprove this miracle. How dare you? Like, that doesn't make sense to me.
There's a lot of things about their lore in this movie that don't make sense to me. Like, I don't. So, yeah, I mean, I get what you're saying. And yeah, it's like I have to work on formulating what that theory is.
Why is stigmata like transmissible by fomite?
Well, that dead priest was real mad, you see.
That's what I don't understand. Like, why was he so pissed? Like, I don't get it. Like, why? That's one of the things that I'm just like, this doesn't make any sense. Like, why is he so pissed? So yes, you were working on the Jesus text and you died before you could finish it, but I don't understand why you come back and like haunt your rosary and then come and afflict this poor girl, and you know, she's not a believer. Like, this should be like, okay, we'll get into it.
Also, wait, I just thought of this. So the point where the person possessing her, who's this priest, really freaks out is when Gabriel Byrne, the priest, says, no, I won't have sex with you. So was the one priest into Gabriel Byrne?
I think what we're saying, I think they kind of were, I think that was a demon. I think he said something earlier that was like, you know, demon possession will usually happen to those that are closest to God.
Oh, so a demon possessed the priest died, and then the demon went from the dead priest's rosary into Patricia Arquette.
I don't think it's that clean. I don't think the demon and the priest had anything to do with each other. I think because old girl was experiencing stigmata, then the demon was like kind of like a hitchhiker. He like sees what's going on in between these two worlds, and he's like, oh, hey, I think I'm going to have a little fun. And so he goes on.
Oh.
But
okay. As you can see, I clearly paid attention to all the plot details.
No, I don't think they're in there. I think we're trying to insert them where none can be found. And like, I think that these screenwriters of Stigmata, who I did not note, were just shoveling creepy Catholic shit at the screen.
Yes.
And, you know, it's, that's one of the many problems with this movie is it, you know, it stops being a story that moves from point A to point B and at a certain point just exists
turns
in
into
the
a
world.
Music video.
Well, let's do the Fexy segment, and then I have more questions for the two of you as horror fans, as fans of Jesus and fans of horror.
Yeah, that's something I did think about. That I was conflicted about. I was like, is this a horror? Or is this like a psychological thriller? Because I don't think I would have. I mean, I think I saw it in the theater, but I don't know if I would really call it a horror film.
It freaked me out.
Yeah, it's freaky.
That it is.
I definitely had several moments where I like I had to put up the finger screen for some of her receipt of God's wounds.
Mm.
Well, and they did eventually, to your point about the music videos, Camila, eventually they were just like, here's a noisy, quick cut scene of spooky things happening. Oh, there's steam
right.
coming out and the fire escape is rattling. It must be
right.
Satan, Jesus.
Oh
priest.
My God. All this newspaper is just like blowing everywhere. Oh my God.
and yet this was a surprisingly consequential movie as the Faxy segment will reveal. Stigmata was released September 10th, 1999. It was the 24th number one film of that year. Won its first weekend with $18.3 million. There were two other new releases. Another horror movie, Kevin Bacon in Stir of Echoes. Has anyone seen that?
I have seen it. It also involves possession, right? Or does he just, he gets like obsessed with something.
Stir of Echoes debuted in third with $5.8 million. And notable bomb, Love Stinks, debuted this weekend. Tyra Banks was in it. It debuted in 11th with $1.3 million. The more notable thing about this particular weekend, Stigmata ended the 5-week box office reign of The Sixth Sense. The
wow.
Sixth Sense debuted on August 8th. It won that weekend with $26.6 million. It only barely slowed down. Each of its first 5 weekends, it made more than $20 million. So it was not really falling in any major way. But Stigmata was enough to trip it up that weekend, the sixth weekend of The Sixth Sense.
Say that 5 times fast.
The sixth weekends of The Sixth Sense, it lost to Stigmata with $16.5 million. if you're keeping track, that means the top three of this weekend, Stigmata, Sixth Sense, and Stir of Echoes, were not only all horror movies, they were all horror movies beginning with the letter S.
The letter of the day is S.
It fell to fourth place in its second weekend, behind two debuts, Blue Streak and For Love of the Game. Sixth Sense pulled back ahead and would stay ahead of Stigmata for all following weekends. It was only in the top 10 for 4 weeks, grossing just over $50 million. That was good for 49th overall for 1999. Number one movie of the year was Star Wars Episode I, The Phantom Menace. Sixth Sense was second, and Toy Story 2 was third. The director of Stigmata is Rupert Wainwright. He has had a career, like he's,
boy, oh boy!
But he has directed very few features. He's at four, in fact. They are the 1994 family comedy Blank Check.
I remember that.
Kid gets a blank check.
I was like exactly the right age to be in the target audience of that, but mm-hmm. I remember thinking like this stuff costs more than $1 million.
Yeah,
this doesn't track.
Yeah.
Disney.
That thing where people are like, oh, I'm going to hit the daily number and then I'm going to live large. Like, no, you might buy a sensible suburban home. That's it. Blank Check made $30.5 million. Rupert Wainwright did a anthology in 1998 called The Sadness of Sex. I don't think it ever got a real release.
That's a depressing title.
It is.
It's one of the worst titles I've ever heard.
Absolutely. By far.
And it was like I didn't look into it much, but it was like 15 short films about how sex is disappointing. I think this says more about
Imagine visiting
it's
an investor, like pitching that to an investor.
Or even being the poor woman who happened to have been having sex with him at that time. Like,
oh my God.
Or every woman previous. I mean,
right.
His most recent release was the 2005 remake of The Fog, which made $46.2 million. So Stigmata is his most successful film. He did, however, direct music videos, including the video for Straight Outta Compton, and
which, wow,
basically every important MC Hammer video including both Too Legit to Quit and You Can't Touch This. What? What?
So this man may be partially responsible for Hammer Pants.
Yes.
Certainly the prominence in the culture.
I mean, they're better than Stigmata.
Are they?
To recap, NWA to yes. Hammer.
How?
To a
How?
Disney children's movie.
How?
To a How? Sad sex art film to Stigmata.
How? Just I'm just stuck on how and
I can't
how
tell you anything
it just
about
doesn't make
it
any sense
like,
to me.
Did Straight Outta Compton have an iconic video or were they
is it no it's, it was there? It was yeah you know it was one of those typical 80s or I'm assuming like 89 90 or whatever, but it's like they're walking through the city basically and there yeah. might be some like police brutality or something that goes in there or something, but it's nothing it's no oh, I forget that director's name. It's no Michael Jackson and Janet Scream.
Right.
I love that video. I think that might too. We might have talked about this. On
probably.
The
it's a brilliant video. Finally, Gabriel Byrne was Razzie nominated for Worst Supporting Actor. Nomination for Stigmata and End of Days,
where he played where he the played, devil.
Where he played Satan. It was a.
That
year
was the
for him.
Same year.
Yes.
Wow.
I don't care what he did. Gabriel does not deserve a Razzie. You guys leave that man alone.
He's great.
Like, he wasn't the problem here.
No. He brought some legitimacy to this fucking movie.
I also remember End of Days being, like, very hokey, but not awful.
Yeah, I don't remember much from it. I do remember enjoying Gabriel's portrayal.
I remember him, being very sexy.
Yeah. Yeah, that's probably
doesn't
the
doesn't he, like,
first
make out with
the
a stranger
time.
And then her lust sets the building on fire? Isn't
I
that
think
a thing?
So. That might be. I don't remember much from it, but, yeah, I do remember me thinking, oh, hey, Gabe, let's go.
Yeah.
Well, you'll be pleased to learn that he did not win that Razzie. He lost Worst Supporting Actor to Ahmed Best, who played Jar Jar Binks.
Which is valid.
Yes.
Poor Ahmed Best.
Has he actually done anything?
So
else?
I had some kind of random connection with a theater person. It was like, I don't know if they reached out to me via Arcade or something else. And I was Googling them and I looked into their theater company and Ahmed Best is part of their company. So he works in theater. Because wow. I read it and I was like, that Ahmed? And the answer is yes.
and like, no matter, you know, what you think of the prequels or that character, he can still do conventions. Like, he can still.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
I mean, any.
Really?
I'm sure. Anytime he wants 25 grand, he can sit in a booth for a weekend. Like,
yeah.
That sounds like a really hard 25 grand because it's got to be people just making fun of you.
I don't. Well, first, there's the like. Weird corner of the internet that is trying to redeem the prequels. Like, are you aware of this? Like, it's Reddit.
I'm way softer on the prequels than most human beings, and I am not aware of it, and I think that it's weird, because while I think that they have redeeming moments, come on.
The other end of that is, like, kind of people who can make tens of thousands of dollars at conventions is such a low bar. Like,
oh,
yeah.
We have a framed, you know, handout over there of a guy who was in like 3 episodes of American Horror Story season 1. Like, and I'm pretty sure Mary Beth paid for it. Like, it's you don't have to actually be liked to make money at conventions. Ahmed Beth aside, I want to get this out of the way because not all of our listeners are Pittsburgh based, but since we are. Did Pittsburgh appear in this movie? Like, I see it listed places as, like, partially filmed in Pittsburgh.
I don't think it is. They don't even do a skyline shot or anything. Like, no. Like, they don't even have stock footage of Pittsburgh.
Wasn't there a scene with, like, the United Artists building or something? And isn't that a thing here? United Artists? Is, I don't know what the building is, but...
I don't recognize that, but I don't know if that's not true.
But it's pretty funny that because when I started watching it, I completely forgot that it was shot in Pittsburgh and supposed to be set in Pittsburgh. And the scene where she's like outside of her salon, I'm like, what is this fucking dirty ass town that they're in? Like, I was like, oh yeah, it's Pittsburgh.
When they're like, here, it's a newspaper clipping from the Pittsburgh Globe.
Right. Yeah. So we don't have one of those.
We don't have one. What you did is you just picked a newspaper word and you landed on the one that wouldn't work. We have one paper that has both Post and Gazette in it, another that has both Tribune and Review in it, and a Courier. Any other newspaper word would have landed.
That's so true. That makes no sense. The Pittsburgh Globe.
And 7 minutes of this movie take place on a New York subway that is just being sold.
This was actually shot in Canada, right?
I think Vancouver did a lot of the exteriors. I remember reading that was, do you remember every subway scene in Seinfeld? That was the same subway car.
Oh, okay.
So that was in a studio somewhere.
All right. I did think, like, wow, this makes Pittsburgh look so, like, in comparison to what you see on screen, Pittsburgh is actually so much more beautiful. And so that made me feel good in a way. I was like, hey, like, look at our vibrant, clean downtown compared to what is depicted here. Although, you know, downtown is much nicer now than it was 21 years ago.
Yeah, exactly.
Look at our existing club scene that is depicted in this movie and totally exists in real life.
Did it exist in the 90s?
I didn't pay much attention to it, but maybe it was Rosebud and whatever was over there.
Yeah.
And then that.
Because
this is around in the Strip District. This is the time I moved here in 98. So.
Oh, great. So you got the hookup.
Yeah. So there was we spent a lot of time in the Strip District, partying, and there was a club. There was like three clubs in one or something.
Metropole and Rosebud and something else. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And then it like changed hands like 80 times. But yeah, maybe that was, you know, maybe it was filmed over there somewhere.
But in any case, please do not form your opinions on Pittsburgh. The most Pittsburgh movie is She's Out of My League. That movie
really leans into all of the places you recognize in Pittsburgh.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
And it's pretty good.
Yeah, I liked it.
I was an extra on there one day.
Oh, really?
And I decided not to go back the next day.
At this time, this was like the first mini filming boom, you know, in the late 90s when I was like, I am going to be a professional actor. So I wanted to register as a potential extra for all of these things. And the first time I did that was when they were working on the Mothman Prophecies.
Oh, wow.
And my mom took me down to whichever casting agent was working on it. And I was filling out the thing. And they said to my mom, here's your form. And she was like, no, I'm just here with him. And she's like, well, we need lots of people. Fill it out. You never know. And as a result, my mom was called more than once, and I never was.
Oh, brutal.
She was called for the Mothman Prophecies and didn't go. She was called for that Robert Redford movie, The Clearing, and my parents are in it for a second.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. This movie is a mess.
It's a hot mess.
I'm genuinely surprised that you guys disliked it, because
I don't. It started to fall apart. Like, it had me for like the first 45 minutes or so. I was surprised about how into it I was, because like I said, I've only seen it once before, and then it just started to fall apart. Just like things.
Fully agree. It's definitely. I did find it really engaging at the start. Like, I do think that the first few sequences of her getting the stigmata are really genuinely creepy in a cool way. But then, like you said, it's very messy. And I did lose interest, but Colin was watching it next to me, and he just kept, like, he kept saying, I can't believe how much I enjoy this movie.
Wow.
And I was like, okay, and this is not his kind of thing, really.
Huh.
Like, he's
interesting.
Jewish. He doesn't care.
Right.
So, yeah, it was, he really liked it, which made me think that you guys might like it, because I was like, well, maybe I don't like it because of horror.
No, it's just because it's not a good movie. The script is... The script is just messy all over the place. And as we were talking about before, like, there's just like the main plot, it doesn't make sense to me as to why this priest is so pissed off. And also the whole trying to seduce Gabriel and all that jazz and how he possessed, like, did he purposefully possess the rosary? This is something he did before he died, or is this something that just happened?
Like, he's just bleeding psychic religious energy.
Right, exactly. And the whole point of that, the only people who truly believe in God or have like a real personal connection with God get stigmata. Okay. So why an atheist? Like, why would he bother doing this? Why would he? Is it just convenience? Was it just because it was like, oh, this is where the rosary ended up, so this is what I'm going to do?
I feel like that kind of conundrum might be really interesting if the rosary thing wasn't there, right? Like, they make it very obvious from the start, like, oh, this is a cursed rosary.
Right, and then they downplay it a lot. Like, we never really get into it. Like, I don't think anybody ever discovered.
Addition? Like, was it maybe a studio note? Like, they wanted it to just be this ambiguous miracle thing, or
maybe. But I mean, it shows up. I don't know, it shows up too many times. I mean, I don't know. I guess it could have been a last minute shot.
Well, and yet they didn't. I was waiting the whole time for like either Gabriel Byrne or the other priests to discover the rosary and put the pieces together. And they not only did they not do it. She never mentioned to this priest who's suddenly in her life, hey, I got that religious thing last week. Like, it never came up.
She was distracted by trying to bone him.
And I'm sure you mentioned where he was, because she wouldn't put two and two together. Like, oh, my mom was just there. In fact, she sent me this rosary from there. Blah, blah, blah. Yeah, it's just kind of messed up how it's that you make such a big deal out of this thing. And then nothing happens with it. There's nothing comes to fruition. That was one of my main gripes about it.
Yeah, I'm lower in my score.
I know it. I did too. Like when we first started, it was like, you know what? Same. I'm knocking it down a couple more. Like, that's same. Right.
Yeah, it's I didn't hate it. It's not my lowest. Even my new lower score is not my lowest score because it's so weird that I don't want to say I enjoyed it, but I got something out of watching it. You know, it's such a, it is very much a movie that would never be made in this way today. Like every 80s movie and every 90s movie is a product of the era to a certain degree, but like this score by Billy Corgan.
Oh, that's right.
Like that distracts, but not in the modern way, like in the you know, in the music video way. Like this is one of the most like specific moments of the 90s things.
Oh, yeah. Seen.
And it's that like, I enjoyed, not that's no credit to the movie, but like, you know, that makes it more watchable than some of the shit we've had.
Yeah, I agree.
But yeah, and there was another thing, like again, I'm mostly just stuck on this whole, like, why they possessed an atheist. And it's like, even when
this rosary plays by Mummy's Tomb rules.
Okay? So when she's writing on the wall and she's like fully possessed by Father Alameda or whatever, and he turns around and he yells, a messenger has faith.
Right.
You can't be a messenger or something. So why did you possess her? She's your messenger at this point. You're not making any sense.
Because he literally went in through her stigmata holes.
Yeah, I was a little weirded out that a lot of the early wounds were like oddly sexualized.
Yes. Like, somebody is definitely horny for blood who's involved in this movie.
Are we actually supposed to conclude that like everything, including like going back to the rosary being stolen, was the priest making sure that the knowledge of his work got to Gabriel Byrne?
You know what? He took a really long ass detour into doing that because I'm pretty sure he could have just like been like, "Yo, Gabe, I'm gonna need you to check underneath."
Also,
I need you to check underneath the floorboards.
Right.
I pitched that forgetting that Gabriel Byrne was in the room in the first.
Right.
I do want a quick shout out to Radha Sherbedjia, the third favorite actor of the Therodathon. He is the other priest who like gets Boris the secret message.
Boris the Bullet Dodger.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. It was very nice to see him, especially in his youthful glory.
Yeah, man. I mean, I was happy to see him. And I love no matter what I see him, and he has a moment of slicking his hair back.
That hair, he has a mane. That man has a mane.
And I was very much interested in that storyline. Like when he's like, okay, so now I'm interested. Now you've got like some secret texts of Jesus who's telling us that we've all been doing it wrong. And so now we should probably, you know, pay more. Oh, we're not going to talk anymore about it. Okay, that's fine. All right.
Right. It's like they bring it up and it's kind of like, I feel like this guy like wanted to be scandalous for religious people, but then really had nothing to say. It's right. like the Joker of criticism of the Catholic Church.
Or it's the dogma of horror movies, because that was also the same mm-hmm. year.
And also Pittsburgh. Mm-hmm. But actually Pittsburgh.
Yes, that was very Pittsburgh.
By the way, if you're the people on Twitter following along with my GIF hints of what movie we're watching, I'm not just GIFing from the movie. Like, so this year, I started on Twitter posting every movie I watch. Like, here's what I'm watching right now and keeping running tallies. And because Robin very justifiably chastised me the first time, I'm no longer spoiling an as yet unaired podcast draw mm-hmm, by mm-hmm. doing this. So I'm putting redacted and the year and then a GIF that is a hint to what I'm actually watching. And so I used the buddy Christ from Dogma, and everyone was like, so you're watching Dogma? No, that wouldn't be a hint then.
No.
That would just be me telling you.
Right. You gotta play the game, guys. Gotta play the game.
Yeah.
And again, the shining elevator for Crimson Tide
is brilliant.
My masterpiece.
That was
really perfect. Chef's kiss.
Yeah, absolutely. Hats off, sir. Well done.
I didn't need that validation, but wait, it's the quarantine. I think I did.
Yeah.
Okay, my other note is going back to like the 90s fabulous of this. The amount that Patricia Arquette wears platform sandals
and socks and thick ass athletic socks.
And it gave me life. She's got that inflatable chair, Claire's Boutique. Mm-hmm. And her frosted lavender nail polish.
Oh, I love it.
I was literally doing my nails or taking my nail polish off, and I was like, ooh, do I own that shade? I don't. But then today when I went to CVS to buy milk, I picked some up.
Nice. And so now life is good.
Later tonight, I will.
You're going to have frosted lavender nails, and all is good in the world.
I mean, very similar note. My other note was, I really miss the power move you got to play by saying, hang on, I have to switch phones.
Oh, yes. And yes, this is like the extreme 80s, the set design and wardrobe for Patricia Arquette. Mm-hmm. My God, there's so much 90s. It's like kind of a bit over the top. I'm just kind of wondering, like, it's like they tried a little bit too hard to make her seem like cool and kitschy, and
because sometimes she looked bad, like,
yeah,
oh yeah,
just in the costume, like, you know, she's great, and four scenes out of five it was like, oh, what a look, and then the fifth one would be like, did you fall into the lost and found at the like.
I think my favorite piece that she wore was that shiny, shiny, super shiny red button-down blouse.
I would wear that.
That's what I'm saying. Like, I love that.
Like, I want that for a Frankly Scarlet show.
Like, I would wear that today.
Yes.
Absolutely.
My favorite of her fashion was when she got her forehead stigmata, her crown of thorns stigmata, and she's like, I guess I'm just going to put a bandana over my forehead.
That's,
like,
that's right. You don't let that stop you, girl. You go on about your day.
She puts a bandana on her forehead and flirts hard with a priest.
Like,
wow. Girl.
The amount of confidence
right.
one is feeling at that point. She didn't skip a beat. Like, it was like, you're okay. He just saw you like bleeding from the head in the rain.
Yeah. The other thing I kept thinking about was that Patricia Arquette was like a year out from beginning filming her Oscar-winning performance in Boyhood.
Holy crap.
Right? How weird is that?
Really?
Yeah. Because looking at this, I was like, oh yeah, the Patricia Arquette I remember from Nightmare on Elm Street 3. But that's late 80s.
Like, right.
Like, yeah.
So early in her career. Yeah, that's weird.
I don't know. Like, I've always had some level of goodwill for Patricia Arquette. Mm-hmm. Also, Nia Long. That was another person in the movie
yes.
who I'm like, I really like you. And
yeah.
But for both of those actors, I don't really know, like, what my entry point for them is.
Boys in the Hood, if you saw that, was probably Nia Long.
That is what it is. I love that movie. yes, that's absolutely it. I didn't see True Romance until I was in my adulthood, which, okay. Thank God.
Yeah, that would have been rough explaining to a 12-year-old.
You know, I've never seen The Nightmare on Elm Street that she's in. I genuinely don't know why I like her so much.
I definitely like her from that Nightmare on Elm Street. That's
I figured it out. It's Flirting with Disaster. Have you seen that movie?
Oh yeah.
That movie is great.
Yeah. I think I've always there's just something about her that I always enjoyed, and I also like give her props for not ever fixing her teeth.
Yes.
Just, like, it's like yes, you do as, you.
I especially as a snaggletooth woman, I appreciate it. So good for you.
Yeah.
Let's rate Stigmata. Yeah, I went down a few points. I didn't hate it. 36.
Oh damn.
Oh.
I'm going.
I have a different definition of didn't hate.
Yeah.
I'm
clearly.
Going 44.
Wow. Okay. So I, you know what, there's a disparagence in the way that we all rate films. I feel like I'm the one that's like, I don't know, 65.
No, and Camila, that was where I was at the start of the movie. At the start of the movie, I was like, okay, this is decent. I'm enjoying it. 60s. And it like slowly moved down.
See, I was like in like 80s. Like in the, I was like at 80 when I started the movie. And then it just like trickled down. It's like, all right, you're just.
They definitely run out of steam in this movie.
Yeah. And well, it's sad because it could have been really interesting.
That's why we take an average. So we get to, you know, the shared opinion, which in this case is 48 and two thirds. Again, we've hit another very average movie in our collective opinions. It falls right in between The Sum of All Fears and Ants. Seems right.
I agree.
I feel like it's still better than The Right.
Oh, I feel we absolutely I played that veto successfully.
Yeah.
Because it was also fun to revisit the Pittsburgh of it all. Because the first time I watched this movie was when I decided I was going to go to Pitt for college. I did like a movie set in Pittsburgh.
I did the
festival.
Same thing.
Yes. Like I watched like I think I watched Sudden Death. I watched Striking Distance.
Yes.
Yeah, it was awesome.
I'm preparing that for the radio this week because we're just doing, you know, Pittsburgh movies that are available to stream.
Oh, cool.
Nice.
And man, people in Pittsburgh love hearing about the movies that were made in Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
Don't we?
I feel like Only You is one where I, like everyone I know who grew up here is like, yeah, I'm in Only You.
Only You.
It's Robert Downey Jr. and Marissa Tomei.
That's what I thought. That that was set here?
Well, part of it's, don't they go to Rome or something? But they start here.
Oh, okay.
Or she starts here, at least.
Huh. I'll have to revisit that.
Like, you know what's really good is The Next 3 Days.
Is that with that little werewolf boy? Or
no, that's the one where Russell Crowe is trying to break Elizabeth Banks out of jail.
The Allegheny County Jail.
I guess I did not see that.
Specifically. Does he, like, tunnel her out through the river or something like that? The jail being at the confluence of the rivers is a plot point.
It changes the way he has to approach it because it's so much easier to shut Pittsburgh down. As Liam Neeson points out when Russell Crowe goes to Liam Neeson for advice.
Yes.
And that's when Liam Neeson says, yeesh, Pittsburgh's tough. And I'm surprised that isn't a soundbite on everything we ever do ever.
Where are you from? Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh's tough.
That's a really good point.
You would think the Steelers would be using the hell out of like all the sports balls.
It's why Bane was able to shut us down so much in The Dark Knight Rises.
Right.
We're just blow up those bridges and oops.
I mean, no one actually lives downtown, so you wouldn't achieve all that much. But still. So,
rich divorcees live downtown.
The bingo card. What do we have? Well, we got 90s. We've certainly checked off the 90s.
Correct.
Oh, yeah. Way. Pittsburgh connection?
Yeah. It's what? Set here.
Wait, of course there's a Pittsburgh connection.
That's what I meant by how much more fucking Pittsburgh connection.
I don't think
any of the other movies we just mentioned. I didn't know if you wanted it to be bolder than that, but yes, you're right.
I mean, it would be questionable if it was like filmed here but set in New York, but it's like
I would still say that counts. Like if it were Dark Knight Rises, I would say that counts.
Right.
Right. We do not have ratings more than 30 apart. Vampire or witches?
Nope.
No,
not quite.
Woman as lead?
Yes.
Was this free on Amazon? Because I'm mad.
It was on Tubi, which is not on the card.
Okay. Because I thought, when I look it up on IMDb, it's like, hey, watch it on Amazon Prime, but I paid for it.
It's not on. I think that they mean you could watch it on Amazon Prime and pay them because Amazon owns IMDb.
That's all that I'm adding. Anybody see anything else that we should be checking out?
No. Wait, did Camila and Sean's ratings differ more than 30?
No, 29.
Ah,
yeah, just
close. Close.
All right.
Anyone get any progress in their bingo pursuit?
I'm like two away in two different spaces.
Ooh, good for you.
Yeah, if we get a remake that I own the DVD of, then I will hit a bingo. I don't know what that would be.
If I get a whitewashed biopic.
There's so many.
I know, right?
This isn't whitewashing, but I did observe that every possession movie starts in a mysterious brown country.
Like, yes.
It is absolutely true.
Yes.
It's never like, oh, a coffin in Milwaukee. Like, it's like we have to go to a dusty place where Satan was hanging out. So no,
we all know
yet.
That Satan is in Milwaukee.
Right.
If he's anywhere, that's where he is.
So it's time for You Can't Handle the Truth.
I haven't really watched anything, but I did want to shout out that HBO is doing this thing where some of their content is free to stream, even if you don't subscribe to HBO.
Bless their
and,
souls.
Yes, including like the full series of The Wire and some other things that
and
like
Sopranos.
Yeah, which are like required for cultural fitness. Yeah. So get on that. But what I wanted to say is that Blinded by the Light, which was one of my favorite movies last year, is one of the movies that's available to stream. So if you haven't seen that yet, absolutely watch it. It is a delight.
Sweet.
Still haven't seen it. Maybe I'll, maybe now is the time.
Yes.
Right.
I have been occupied. By the time this comes out, I'm pretty sure this will be available or nearly available. I'm popping in on Row House's doing like an almost, you know, Siskel and Ebert at the Movies style web show every now and then.
Oh, cool.
During the pandemic. And I was like, yeah, I'll absolutely do that. And then they were like, okay, here are the four movies you have to watch. And I said, wait, four. Four whole movies.
four
to the other movies.
Whole ass movies. Okay.
So that has taken up my time, but everything was good. I just watched Heathers, which is still delightful and bizarre. I might buy a t-shirt.
One time Colin watched Heathers not knowing what it was about and texted me the whole time, and I was doing a show that night, I think, and so like I came back to the thread of Colin slowly discovering what kind of movie Heathers is.
This just happened with Mary Beth in person, like, yeah. 20 minutes in, she was like, wait, they're killing people in this movie? Is this really happening? Like,
yeah. It was so great. It was such a great text.
That is such a weird movie, and I genuinely enjoy it.
I watched that movie so much as a kid, going back to watching movies that are not really appropriate for children. Like, I just completely accepted it as this is what movies are like. Like, it did not scandalize me as a youth.
Well, that's good.
Yeah.
So Heathers was one of them. The new one is called Driveways. It's an indie movie with Hong Chow that is out now in virtual cinema. It was very nice, you know, not a knockout, but a very pleasant quarantine watch. The Bollywood hit Three Idiots was on the list.
Mm.
I don't have a lot of Bollywood experience. This is one of the biggest Bollywood movies ever made. You know, so much is lost in translation, and yet the very few Bollywood movies I've seen, I'm just happy at how movie they are.
I totally agree.
Like, there's everybody's falling in love and singing, and there's wacky hijinks, and also people are dying because it's a melodrama too. It's yeah.
I haven't watched a Bollywood movie in a while. That's like the one time where people randomly bursting into song, like 1000% works for me. Every time a musical number or a dance number happens in a Bollywood film, I am on board.
Three Idiots was pretty good. Like, it's on Netflix. You could watch it right now. It's very entertaining. And like, I was shocked at how, not only was it a global, it's one of the only Indian films to really break out in Southeast Asia.
Huh.
At one point, it was the biggest film in the history, the biggest self-made film in the history of India. It said that it had an impact on how education is handled in the country.
Wow.
And on a much less important level, the female lead is named Kareena Kapoor, And I'm shocked that she's not a global celebrity because she's one of the most attractive people I've ever seen in my life. It was like, I was instantly stunned and needed to learn more. So three idiots.
Oh, wait, I just pulled up a picture. She looks like your girlfriend, Sean.
See how that works? Good.
That's funny.
And the other one, they were like, pick a Pittsburgh movie. I picked Zach and Miri Make a Porno. I love that movie. It's so, like, it's there's some problematic moments because it's a Kevin Smith movie from more than 10 years ago. But it's just so sweet.
But also Elizabeth Banks, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
She's done two Pittsburgh movies.
At least.
Yeah.
I feel like there's a third I'm not thinking of. Anyway, she's great, too.
She is.
Zach and Miri is also on Netflix, and it's very, very good. Camila, what have you been watching?
I finally watched the Harley Quinn movie.
Yay!
And I loved it.
Yay!
So much better than I thought it was going to be. Like that was a really good time. And I really loved the freaking fight scene in the funhouse.
It's like, good.
It was so well done. Like it was amazing. Like the choreography and the dialogue going along with it, and it was just amazing. And then I saw the little whole the ponytail holder part.
Iconic.
It's like, dude, that's so on point. Like I love just like real simple, real subtle, nothing, don't make a big fuss about it, but it means so much.
It's this throwaway moment that spoke to my soul.
Right.
And like, I feel like I felt from in that tiny little moment, it felt the same way that like when I saw like the Lady Ghostbusters, when like Kate McKinnon does her like huge badass thing, which like literally made me cry in the theater.
Dude, and I was so hype on that.
We did like a arcade ladies, let's go see this movie together. And it was like a group of like 15 or 20 of us. And like, it was an amazing movie going experience. But this little throwaway moment, like gave me the same feeling. Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah. And I fully intend on buying it. Like it was just really, it was much better than I thought it was going to be. And then I realized, female director. Oh, female wrote it. Okay, so yes. This is why. And also just like when they're going through and they're changing their clothes and she offers Rosie Perez the corset. And she's like, whatever. Not, like turning her nose about it and it looks like she doesn't wear it. But turns out the thing is bulletproof. Yep. So like that's amazing. That's what I like to see.
Yeah. I also like, I shaved my balls for this.
Right.
Mary Beth has two full outfits from Birds of Prey. One is the jacket that's just the fringy sleeves and...
Oh my god.
Yeah.
Like caution tape?
Yeah.
Mary Beth has the caution tape jacket?
They were selling it at Hot Topic. It was like $90.
My god.
Sorry to give away what you paid for it, but...
I can edit it out.
No, you can leave it in.
I'd pay $90 for that.
Right, if you know my girlfriend, that was not a difficult decision. To make that. And the other one is the I shaved my balls for this outfit.
Oh nice. My gosh! Wow, amazing.
I love that movie too. Let's draw a movie.
Let's draw a movie.
Oh, by the way, Robin brought this up to me the other day. Whatever, like, indie movie that's playing on two screens in Oregon or whatever that may or may not...
It's a Florida drive-in.
Yeah, that is very, very technically listed as the number one movie. No, it doesn't count.
It's called Swallow, and it's about Pika. I don't know if that's how you pronounce it.
Pika.
Pika, yes, the condition where you eat non-food.
Yes.
Hold on. We have a special guest. Mary Beth, come on in.
Hi, Mary Beth.
Hello.
Some fact checks. Sean bought me that jacket for Valentine's Day because of love.
That's now I remember that's true.
There it is.
And Dennis O'Hare was in season 1, season 3.
Yeah, what are you talking about, dude? I paid for Dennis O'Hare.
Season 5 and season 6 of American Horror Story.
I don't know. I do not mean our Dennis O'Hare framed picture, which is very legitimate. I mean the framed handout of Teddy Sears. Who was in 3 episodes of season 1.
Hey, that was free.
Oh, okay.
He was so nice, though.
I believe
it. He was really nice. But I didn't want people to get the facts wrong.
Thank you, Mary Beth.
Yes.
I appreciate this clarification.
Faxi segment part 2.
So, and I didn't remember that until that moment. So, yes. I bought the caution tape jacket from Birds of Prey.
You're a good boyfriend.
That is a really good present. Good job.
I would I would do it again. But yeah, to what Robin was saying, there are films that are claiming to be the number one movie in America. They don't count. It's Onward until, you know, a significant number of theaters are open again.
Oh, gotcha. Okay.
None of those are in the list. But what is on our list is number 428, which is, I've never seen it, and I always kind of wanted to. It's The Fugitive.
Oh, cool.
Oh, wow, that's such a good movie. Yay!
My parents had the VHS tape, and I remember one day I was like, I'm going to watch The Fugitive, and I, like, fell asleep or, you know, got distracted or had to go to soccer or something, and I've never gone back to it. I'm really interested.
It's one of my, when I used to flip through channels on TV, it's one of those, oh, if I flip to that, I watch the rest of it movie.
It's a day changer.
Yep.
Harrison All right, cool. Ford and Tommy Lee Jones. It's a movie with a jawline. I am looking forward to watching that next week. To take us home, September 10th, 1999, Stigmata was the number one movie in America. What was the number one song in America?
Was it Britney, bitch?
No, you're early.
Bye, bye, bye.
No, you're not.
No, that's way too early. Yeah. Wait.
Was it Backstreet Boys?
It was neither of those. Baby One More Time was the beginning of that year. This is...
Is it Livin' La Vida Loca?
No.
Good guess, though.
Livin' La Vida Loca was a six-week number one this year, and you are moving geographically in the right direction.
J-Lo.
No.
Enrique Iglesias.
Enrique Iglesias. With
Bailamos.
Bailamos.
Oh, that's a good song. That's a good song.
quite possibly the exact sonic opposite of everything about Stigmata.
Number one movie in America.